Welcome to the Data Democracy. Presented by renowned O'Reilly author Olsen Benyu. Empowered by Xenia. Make your data accessible and discoverable by anyone, anywhere, at any time.
Hi everybody, you're listening to The Data Democracy, and I'm your host, Ole Olesen Benyu, Chief Evangelist in Xenia, and the author of the Enterprise Data Catalog published by Relly. In this podcast, we explore what an enterprise data democracy is with knowledgeable guests. Today's guest is Jason Howe. Jason is a social science fellow at the University of Chicago and previously with ThoughtWorks. There are many things that I wanted to talk to Jason about. Jason was one of the internal reviewers inside ThoughtWorks of the Data Mesh book by Jean-Marc Degani prior to its publication. And as such, Jason got to provide critical feedback on data governance aspects of a data mesh. So, obviously, I wanted to hear him out about that and his ideas on data governance in general. I also wanted to hear him out about some way more serious stuff. But I will let Jason explain that in his own words. Okay, so my takeaways from my conversation with Jason. First, a data leader takeaway. Jason has been discussing data governance with Jean-Marc Degani, Martin Fowler, and even Tim Berners-Lee. And I think it's great to take your knowledge and insist on it, meeting impressive peers. That is data leadership. Second, a data democracy takeaway. Jason had a great comparison on the distinction between data governance and data management. Data governance are like auditors, and data managers are like accountants. And three, a personal takeaway. Jason is someone that is capable of going on even in very hard times, and I must say I found that very inspiring. Okay, enough of me talking, let's hear what Jason has to say. Hi, Jason.
Hey, Ole, it's great to be here. Thanks for including me in your podcast.
You're more than welcome, Jason. It's a pleasure to have you.
Yeah.
So for the listeners of the podcast, do you care to just briefly describe where you're based, what you've done in your career, stuff like that?
Yeah, I'll keep this really brief because, you know, this is the part where people usually tune out. But I retired as emeritus, a data governance emeritus from ThoughtWorks. Prior to that, I worked in a lot of data governance positions, mostly around fintech and around defense manufacturing. So these would be, in my humble opinion, considered critical data sets. Like these were, you know, mission critical. The F-135 engine project they're working on for Pratt & Whitney, I mean, that's a $1 billion engine, right? Mm-hmm. And we had to come up with a maintenance plan for them. So I can't think of something more mission critical than that, except maybe medical devices. But we also had to do some mitigation on misalignment between what Citibank saw as data governance and what the SEC saw as data governance, right? We had to get them on the same page. That was also mission critical. So I worked in some pretty high level data governance gigs. It didn't start out that way. In fact, the start of my career was convincing the town of Cary that data governance was an actual thing, right?
There's still people working on convincing companies that data governance is a thing.
But, you know, they were having all kinds of data problems. And I was like, well, maybe we should consider data management as a big problem. And they're like, no, we don't believe in that data governance stuff. And that was a two-year conversation to make that happen. And, you know, I didn't have much name recognition back then. But that's my career. I started out in social sciences. I moved into data security, and then I moved into data governance, right? Yeah. And finally, I ended up doing policy for data governance. So as I got older, nobody wants a 40-year-old coder guy. They want a 40-year-old policy guy. So I moved into policy so I can stay relevant. That's my career.
Yeah, I get you. I get you. I feel age affecting me as well. Jason, you prior to this recording, we spoke quite a bit, and I've been interested in your profile, as I also mentioned in the introduction, for various reasons, right? You chose, when you talked to me, to be very open about why you retired from basically from an active work life. You wanted to share this also. So I think for the rest of the conversation, I think it would be great for the listeners to get this, since you've chosen to be so open about it.
I do want to share that because I see other colleagues that have critical illnesses become irrelevant very quickly. And I think that's a shame. So I was diagnosed with stage 4 colorectal cancer in 2022. And at first I thought it was a death sentence, but it turns out it's a chronic illness. Now, there are some things that can be critical. Like, for example, I just had a ileostomy operation where my small colon was removed, and now I have a ostomy bag. That hurt.
Yeah.
And I had sepsis, and so I'm going to have a very, very long recovery time. However, I can sit in a chair and I can write. And now that I've recovered somewhat, I could finish my review of your book, which I've been working on, the Enterprise Data Catalog book. And I'm still commenting on things I read on LinkedIn and other places, where I feel that there's a misalignment between what data governance is and what data management is, and how those two get conflated, and that how that causes major problems when you're trying to implement a data governance solution. You know, for example, data governance makes all the decisions. They're the accountable party. Data management executes on those decisions. They're the responsible party. When those get mixed up, that's when you have a role and responsibility problem, where data management people, i.e. the platform people, start to take over data governance, like policies, thresholds, things like that. And it becomes a mess because now you have data management self-correcting, and you definitely don't want the accountants to be the auditors, and vice versa, right? So data governance is the auditors, and data management are the accountants, right? The two shall never meet, right? And they should stay separate. And I find that that's a big problem right now when we're talking about AI, data governance, ethical frameworks, and moral frameworks to kind of set guidelines for things like AI.
Jason, that's a lot of things to comment on here. First of all, I think you are such an example for the data community. I mean, of course, it's very, very life-changing to get a diagnose like the one you got. I wish more people would be as open about their health situation as you, and definitely what an example you are for the entire community. Thank you for that a lot, Jason. And then secondly, I think getting into the weeds here, I think you're absolutely right, and I love that comparison between between auditors and accountants, right? Because normally what you get in those discussions is that, okay, the data governance, those are the guys with like the fancy ties and or the big paycheck, and the managers, they are just the doers, right?
Dusty books.
Yeah. Come again?
In the big dusty books.
Yeah, right? Exactly. So the way I discovered you on LinkedIn, as I said in the introduction, is one of the things that I thought about when I read your comments, very literary, very elegant comments to the data and tech literature in general, and especially on Data Mesh, was that it struck me that, okay, you were in ThoughtWorks at a given moment in time. You had these ideas of data governance. Could there have been a role in terms of what became known as Data Mesh and the fact that that came out of ThoughtWorks? So can you tell us a little bit about the role? And I asked you about that, and I was really interested in your answer, and I think our listeners will. So will be that also. So can you tell us what was your kind of role when Data Mesh emerged inside ThoughtWorks? How did you comment on it? What were your thoughts?
I did comment on it. There were some things first, I have a lot of respect for Jean-Marc Dagani. I think she pulled a framework, a paradigm. It's not a reference model. I've seen people write reference models for Data Mesh, and I'm like, yeah, nope, that's not it, right? The reason is Jean-Marc wrote a paradigm of what could be, and nominally, it's a generic framework. Generic is not meant to be specific to any one solution. And I think that's where there's a lot of misunderstanding. Like, if every problem is a nail, your one tool is going to be a hammer, right? So if you have a data mess, right, and you want to fix it, and you read about Data Mesh, wow, that sounds like the perfect hammer. Let's just hammer it all in with Data Mesh, where really we have many, many different paradigms and architectures and solutions that are not Data Mesh, right? So, in fact, a couple of folks and myself commented on when not to use Data Mesh, right? So, for example, Data Mesh is when you have your roles and responsibilities mapped out, when you have your virtuous cycle mapped out, when you have an accountability mechanism mapped out. These things are all necessary. These are all the basic building blocks of data governance and data management, right? These are not exotic things, but they do have to exist. And what I've seen is a lot of Data Mesh implementations just slap it on there, right? And hope for the best. And then when problems come up, we'll fix them then, right? And so I've seen that. Some other things I've seen where Data Mesh has gone wrong, and then we'll talk about when Data Mesh goes right. So, for example, in the pharma business, I've seen complete misunderstanding. Like, for example, there won't be a data governance office. There will be a data governance unit inside of another business unit. Okay, what's the problem with that? Well, you're self-congratulating yourself on getting the data right for you, right? You're optimizing the cost and the quality of the data for you, the business unit, and then you're exporting data debt down the line, right? So you're exporting all your, your crap to the next guy, and they got to figure it out. So it's not efficient. Where I've seen data mesh work wonderfully well is when there is a data governance office and there's a thin line of conformance between the data mesh product owners or product, whatever you want to call them, between that group and the risk management group, right? Because the thing is, you can't really have an autonomous group and not have it connect to risk management, because an organization ultimately is responsible for everything it produces, right? So if you have a pharma and it screws up on some piece of data somewhere that leads to a adverse outcome, the entire organization is responsible, not just the data mesh group who maybe made it or some other group who maybe did it. But ultimately, the accountability lies with the data governance people and the risk management people. So they have to have some thin line of conformance between what they do and what data mesh does. And what that does is it gives autonomy to data mesh within guidelines, right? Within guardrails. So if you imagine a dark, foggy road, but with white lines along the borders, the white lines along the borders are data governance, and the white, foggy road is what data mesh is trying to navigate through, right? But without those white lines, it's going to go off the road and then create a big mess. So where I've seen data mesh work is where data mesh recognizes it needs some conformance to the risk management model to avoid adverse outcomes, but within those guidelines, it's free and clear to do what it wants. But there has to be guidelines, right? That's my humble opinion.
I think it's a very, very precise and useful humble opinion, if I may, Jason. I think it's very, very useful for the listeners to, to listen to that.
Back at the beginning, because you brought up ThoughtWorks, back at the beginning, I was a brand new thought worker. I had only been here about 2 or 3 months. So the first meeting I ever had was with Martin Fowler. Okay, a little intimidating.
Must be.
Oh, I'm going to meet Martin Fowler. Great. I'll probably be an employee for about another 5 minutes and then I'm gone. Right. Because, he has a low threshold for stupidity, right? And I'm not the smartest man in the room.
Come on, Jason.
No. Martin Fowler is
he's an authority.
More clever than I am. Anyway, so I met him and he kind of agreed with some of my opinions. So I felt almost elation. I think almost like, wow, I might be smart after all. Who knows, right? But then he told me, so I want you to go on a webcast with Jean-Marc, and I want you guys to hash it out about data governance and data mesh.
Wow.
I'm like, well, Martin, I've only been here a couple months. I don't think I have the clout to do that, but I'll give it a shot. So I thought very carefully about what I was going to say, and I decided to stick to the thin line of conformance. It's hard to argue with that. That's basic data governance 101. I hadn't read the book yet because it was still being published. Mm-hmm. I had reviewed it because I was asked to review a couple of chapters. My reviews were tossed out, right? Because they're too data governance-y. And when I read the principles, I understood why my comments were thrown out, because there's a principle called automated data governance, right?
Yeah, I remember that passage.
Here's the problem with that statement. One, data governance is never an operating model, right? So data management is an operating model.
Yeah.
Okay, you can choose your flavor of operating model, but it's always data management. Data governance is never an operating model, and you certainly can't automate it, because data governance is people. There should be no automation in data governance. It should be stewarded by people who have overwatch on the data management people. They're watching what happens. They are calculating the ROI on the operating model. They catch whatever is inefficient in the workflow, right? That's what the data governance people do. You can't do that with automation. You just can't. You may be able to do some things, like, for example, figure out the lineage of something. That's still a data management function. I'm trying to think of a data governance function that would require automation. And for the life of me, I can't figure one out right now. I've thought about this for months and months and months. If somebody has a suggestion, I'm all over it. I will concede that maybe there's room for automation, but I haven't heard a argument yet that would validate that. So that was my experience at ThoughtWorks. I noticed that I've had three webcasts with Jean-Marc, who, by the way, was very polite and very non-condescending to me, which I really appreciate. Because most of the time, data governance people have a big uphill fight, whoever they talk to.
Yeah.
And I thought she was gracious, respectful, and we had a good conversation. In fact, those three videos have gotten thousands and thousands and thousands of views, because people want to know, what's the deal with data governance and data mesh, right?
Yeah,
what's the
sure.
relationship? And so they read that. So they watch these videos over and over again, you know, like I'll get some notification. You got 45,000 views on this video. And I'm like, too bad I can't monetize that. Right.
Yeah. Yeah.
But anyway, so that was my experience with ThoughtWorks. I also thought my boss, John Spence, gave me a lot of slack. He always commented that I'm too academic, right? Like, I'm too theoretical and I'm not applied enough. I said, well, applied, again, that's data management. Theoretical is data governance, right? So, again, my humble opinion. But, if anybody wants to argue with me, I would love the chance to argue and hear something that proves me wrong, right? I always like to learn from my mistakes.
Yeah, I've been told I'm too theoretical and academic all my life as well, or my work life as well. My present CEO, Luc Legardeur, he always says, it's too academic, Ole. You got to make it actionable. Yeah. I know you can. I know, and I of course I can, but it's just like, by nature, I love complex ideas. I love, like, everything we do as data practitioners is rooted in theory, understanding of language, and so forth. And I think the core of all the problems that we're facing is rooted in a not good enough understanding of all that academic literature and theory that is behind all of the discussions. Yeah. And I think many of the discussions just go, they just go in circles because people don't read enough and they don't listen enough. They just want to talk. They just want to have influence and power and money. And that's, it's not easy to get in data, but definitely if you push your own agenda and just you may be able to approach this field in that way with success, right? And I think many of the problems are rooted in the fact that we do not go back to the sources and understand them well enough.
So, I agree. In fact, to build on that, I have heard practitioners say people from the past, like, let's say Bob Siner or Peter Aiken or any of those, Todd Harbor, right? Those are giants upon which I built my understanding, right? And it'll say, oh, those guys are too old. They got nothing more to contribute. I'm like, have you read their stuff? Because it's way better than your stuff, right? So yeah. Peter Aiken has a whole framework of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Here's how you go, right? And Bob Siner, non-invasive data governance.
Yeah,
you can't beat that. Like it's the thing about Bob Siner. He's the closest holistic guy. Well, besides myself, because I'm a social scientist. I have a degree in social science and a degree in cybersecurity, so it makes me kind of weird. But Bob Siner also has a deep theoretical background in social science, which he married to data, right? And the reason that's important is Peter Drucker said, you know, culture eats strategy, right? So that's true in data governance. If you don't map your governance strategy or your data strategy to the culture that you're dealing with, however messed up it is, because most of them are kind of ill-informed and messed up, it's going to fail, right? Because you need the traction. The wheels have to grip the road, and the wheel is the strategy and the road is the culture, right? And without getting that grip and moving forward, it's just not going to happen, right? I mean, it looks good. Yeah, that paper looks great. That framework you built, I've read that in Dhamma. It looks great, but it's not going to work here because these guys are all over the place. And first you got to get them on the same page, right? Which is a cultural thing. And then you can get them on the technical stuff, right?
Yeah, I very much agree.
Yeah.
And great sources you cited there also. Yeah, I think we are close to actually the end here. Got a couple of questions left, Jason. First of all, I know that you decided to retire, but you didn't completely manage to do it anyway, right? You are beginning to be active again. Where can people follow you, and what do you do now?
Well, I'm on LinkedIn. That's where I publish most of my stuff. I thought I was going to write a book, but I just don't have the energy to do it. I am working on a Why Your Book Is Needed, your enterprise data catalog book. It is, let me add, when I read your book, I was pleasantly surprised that it wasn't a technical solution. It was a cultural, holistic solution to, I think I mentioned this to you, it's like you remembered what librarians do, what card catalogs do, and how do you curate data so it's useful? Because what libraries don't have all the data that human beings have. That would be useless. But they do have a curated set of data that's important to their patrons.
Yeah.
I look at enterprise data catalogs as being similar to that, which is why I want to review your book so badly. Right. I'm going to put it on Amazon, but I also want to write I'm going to take the same review and flesh it out and put it on LinkedIn and say, if you've forget all the other enterprise data catalog books, read this one.
Oh, that's right? So kind of you. I wasn't really aiming to get praise with that question, but thank you very much. It's so nice.
I want to get it in there. So
I know you will also be teaching a little bit at the University of Chicago, right?
I will. I was newly designated a fellow in the Society and Technology Initiative. So I was chosen for my dual background in social science and technology. And so we're going to be discussing the effects of technology on society. So
that's so interesting. So interesting. Keep me posted on that one.
I will. One last thing. Tim Berners-Lee and I had a conversation 10 years ago.
You mentioned this now at the end of the... I'm a very, very big Tim Berners-Lee fan, obviously.
Me too. And I like it that he talks with his hands. He's a little eccentric. I could say that, Tim, because you admitted you're eccentric. But he's very, very pointed with his views. And this is what he said. He said, I'm not sure the internet was not a mistake. Because he goes, if it wasn't for me, the internet would be a much different place. And it wouldn't be so easy for crackpots to have their 5 minutes of fame.
Yeah.
I'm like, good point. And he also said the collectivization of materials onto fewer and fewer platforms by fewer and fewer people has led to not discourse, but divisiveness. And so what I want to do is take those ideas and really explore them. For example, how do we prevent another Cambridge Analytica, right? How do we prevent, genocide and stuff through the internet, right? There has to be ways. So I think my whole humble opinion, so preview here, it should be the end of the technopoly, right? Yeah. So it should be the end of massive collection of data by a few sources. Mm-hmm. Go back to the internet of 2009.
Oh, yeah.
That was beautiful. That was fun.
It was. The reason why I respect Tim Berners-Lee an awful lot is exactly because his vision of the web was not what it became. He wanted to do exactly what you have described, right? And he has been fighting for that ever since. So he did not envision the end state that we have right now, at least. Okay, yeah. Jason, we went a little over time, but you had a lot of interesting things to say. I think that you handle the moment in life that you find yourself in beautifully. I wish more people would be able to do that, could find the energy and the courage to do that. And what a lot of interesting people you've talked with, many more to come. thank you very much for your time, Jason.
I thank you for the opportunity. This has been absolutely fantastic. I can't wait to rewatch it and cringe and go, oh, did I say that?
Well, we all know that feeling.
Yeah, I know. Thank you very much.